Before I open in prayer, I do have to introduce someone that's with me, brand new to Gallup. Not really brand new to Gallup. He is actually son-in-law to the late Ed Munoz, current Margaret Munoz's. He's married to Connie Munoz. Bennett, Bill Bennett, would you, Dr. Bill Bennett, would you stand? He's at the Lighthouse with us. He's done leadership training in South Africa for 30 years, but he just recently joined our staff and wants to make a difference in our community. That's why we're here today, representing the church, our church community. We want the church community to get involved in community events and things that would benefit all the people, not just our church. So let's pray together, and thank you for letting me introduce him. Father, thank you for your goodness. You are absolutely good in all things, a good, good Father. I believe you've brought us together today to give solutions, real working solutions. You said in your word, if we would ask wisdom, that you would freely give that. So we're asking your wisdom. As we join together, you would give us thoughts that would be real problem solutions. And thank you for every person that has a concern for our community, the college, the city, the state, people on the street. We're thankful for every person that's involved, that's here today, that has input and ideas. Lord, let us take away from this today something productive that will bless, because you are a blesser. Your desire is to restore things that have been desolated. And we just believe you to give us strategies, wisdom, help, and understanding, an ability to work together to bring goodness to the people of our community. The most important thing that we have in this area are the people. And Lord, we need job creation. We need industry. We need you to open doors for us. Draw companies, people to look at this place and just be drawn to bring their business here. Lord, you're able to do all things. And you're famous at taking places that are desolate and destroyed and making them like a freshwater garden. So we expect you to do that for our community and for this whole area, for the Navajo Nation. Pray these things in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. I want to introduce our division director, Mr. L.D. Lovett. He wanted to introduce the staff this morning. L.D.?
Thanks, Sonny. In a workshop like this, a summit, as we come together and listen to the speakers, and we have a really dynamic group of speakers, but this is not possible, it wouldn't be possible without people behind the scene. And so at this time, I'd like to just take a minute to introduce the staff, the planning committee that's been working for a really long time to put together your package and to make sure everything go as planned. So those who are on the planning committee, if they can just stand and be recognized. We have one person in the back, and we have two down here, and RJ is someplace around. And we also have a student that's working with us, a young lady here. So she's been very helpful in terms of doing some research. So when we talked about the future of leaders, and we talked about the future, she's going to be one of those leaders coming through. So again, thank you for giving me the opportunity to introduce the speakers. And I'll turn it back over to Sonny so you can get us back on schedule.
Good morning. Nana, Yate, Buenos Dias, Cliche, Lolama. I learned that from KTNN. I'm listening to the radio every morning. Young lady by the name of Wanda Francisco. The next speaker doing the welcoming and opening remarks is our leader here, our boss here, the executive director of the UNM Gallup campus. Many of you have probably already met him, but it's only fair and proper to have him do the opening remarks. Dr. Dyer?
Thank you very much. Yeah, so he hit all the ones I was going to do. He's copying me. So I can do like, buongiorno, osagazamasu, guten tag, bon dia, and as we'd say in Alvarado, buena dia, which is the way you say buenos dias when it's really hot, because it's too hot to say buenos dias. So good morning, thank you all for being here. This is a wonderful occasion. This is our third annual Workforce Summit. We are hoping to build momentum every year towards the creation of collaborations and partnerships. And that's what this is about. In your daily lives, you have relationships with all kinds of people, from your families to your peers, the people at work, the people that you serve as clients. And what we want to do is build on that. This is a year and a time in our history where building partnerships and recognizing and appreciating relationships is the only way forward. We really need to start doing that out here in McKinley County and throughout the state of New Mexico. Part of that is also recognizing where help comes from. And I like to mention that a little bit. We're going to be hearing from Vicki Mora in a second, but we have relationships that are developing and growing. Our relationships we hope to encourage here with, for example, the Navajo Nation Workforce Development with Ron Curtis up there. Howdy, Ron. Yate. And with Innovate Educate, which is represented here, with the Kellogg Foundation, which is represented here through Vicki, and with many others that we're trying to build a consensus on. Now, when I got here 3 years ago, we didn't even have a workforce division. It was me and LD looking at each other and saying, what are we gonna do? We now have a vibrant workforce development division, and it's, I think, knocking socks off. But this should be a banner year in that regard. But we can't do it without you. We need your help, we need your support, we need your ideas. And that's what this session and this workshop summit is about, is sharing those ideas and bringing them together in a way that's going to improve the lives for ourselves, for our business community, and for our students, those who are in K and those who are in 14, K through 14. And just a final comment on that, we do not draw barriers. We know that all students are our responsibility. Our youth are our responsibility. I take this very seriously. Even though my beat is higher education, I recognize that, you know, down to kindergarten and middle school and on up, we need to collaborate with our fellow educators here to create pathways and career tracks that will make it easier for us folks to flow into the workforce. Now, why is that so very important? When I got here, and Ralph can testify to that, and Sandra can testify to that, when I got here, there was no connection much between our campus and our community. And we've worked very, very hard to create that, not only directly with our city and our county, but with our business community. Cynthia Jarvis, would you stand up, please? And we've been stealing people from Navajo Nation. I'm sorry, Ron. But, you know, outstanding people like Cynthia Jarvis, who runs our Small Business Development Center, who, by the way, is knocking the socks off her job and has been recognized by her boss for doing so, right? He's even given her extra revenue so she can do the outstanding work that we need out here. So anyway, I'd like to continue on and introduce one of my partners, people in crime and have been working with for, what, 18 months, you figured? I met Vicki Mora 18 months ago, and Vicki and I had started in a quest to understand the relationship between workforce needs and employer needs. And so we're trying to link and bridge that gap. And we'd like to do it, you know, in a K through 14 continuum, so we really are generating the jobs and opportunities that are needed out here. Vicki is in charge of, I'll let her tell you the exact title, but I'm on her foundation board for Associate General Contractor. She's been working in this business, in this industry, for her whole life, ever since she was 12, I think, right? Yeah, close, close, close. Anyway, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Vicky Mora from Associate General Contractors.
Good morning. Thank you, Rachel. Good morning. Oh, I'm so pleased to see many of you who I've spent 10 minutes with, or I've spent hours with, in talking about promising opportunities for your community. So I thank you for this invitation. And it's so very important that we do a good job for the Kellogg Foundation with the opportunity that I'm going to present to you this morning. I'm here to share with you a very promising program called Communicate, Connect, and Employ. And that is the result of energizing the workforce, which was reported to you at last year's workforce development. We were most fortunate that at the year end of 2012, we were invited to your community by a community leader, Rick Murphy with Murphy Builders, who is also one of my board members at AGC. I work for Associated General Contractors. It's a trade association of commercial builders who put in place roughly 60% of the commercial work done in this state. It's an organization that's very committed to a strong workforce development agenda. Workforce development is not new to us. I won't highlight that. It's my understanding that my resume is in your packets. And so I just want to share with you that we come to the table with decades of experience. And so it was that caught the attention of community leaders, including Michael Sage, who I see in the audience. Michael, thank you. And under the leadership of Representative Patricia Lundstrom at the time, who were grappling with this Greater Gallup Economic Development Initiative, how they had just completed an analysis, a very detailed analysis of the strengths and weaknesses and opportunities in your community. And as a result of that, we were brought in to meet some of the community leaders, primarily educators and business leaders, to talk about where was the disconnect, why don't we have vibrant programs in the community. And so under the leadership of Dr. Dyer, who was hired, I believe, in 2013, he clearly understood that workforce development had to be anchored here at the UNM Gallup campus. So that's just a brief overview as to what's led us to here. And it's because of Dr. Dyer's commitment to the community. And I'd also like to acknowledge Ralph Richard, who's the member of the UNM Foundation Board. It was their commitment to community that funded my organization to allow me 18 months in this community to talk with leaders like Ron Curtis with the Navajo Nation, the Workforce Development Initiatives, to work with Councilwoman Virginia Trujillo, I believe, Chavez, I'm sorry, Virginia, with the Zuni Council, who we explored opportunities with the Zuni campus and really dived into some detailed work. It allowed me to meet local public education figures like Superintendent Frank Cipetti and Greg Schuster. And I'm so pleased to see in the audience Lynette and Keith Hill, who are faculty members with Navajo Pine High School. And so I just want to give you a sampling of the systems that we've been involved in. So Dr. Dyer shared with you that I've built a career in construction. I am a former CEO of AGC. I have 40 years, but I'm rooted in workforce development. And that's what's led to my organization readjusting and looking at full-time workforce development attention. So hopefully I've covered an overview of communication here and what brought us and set the stage. I'd like to inspire you and talk to you about my profession through a YouTube. I know that everybody likes to be entertained, so I'm going to rely on our IT professionals to give you a snapshot of what others how others are thinking about the commercial construction industry, the pipeline industry, and alternative energies. And this is a 3-minute clip, but it's your colleagues in other states.
When I was young, we were told, oh, Sanskrit only get an education if you don't going to be digging ditches. Digging ditches today is high tech.
Career in technical education has gotten a bad rap over the last 15 or 20 years from a lot of adults who for some reason look down their nose on people that work with their hands.
The days of the old pneumatic valves have long gone. We're using electronics, smart transmitters. You know, a lot of these people are really computer technicians.
One of my misconceptions in starting out as a counselor was that I was there to push college, and if they can't get into college, then there's a fallback of vo-tech.
People who have been primarily in the educational field as their main employment track perhaps do not fully understand how craft professionals work.
The crafts, they can work their way through college if they would like to do that with their skills. So it's not a dead-end road if that's what some people might think.
There are alternative paths to 4-year college degrees.
Encourage parents, administration, teachers to allow students to pursue their passion.
By the time he finished his first semester, he was like, Mom, this is great. This is what I want to do. And I want to rearrange what I'm doing because I love this. I love working with my hands.
When you're done with high school, when you walk away in June, where are you going? We really, really have to be the ones to get that word out there to the kids.
Everyone in this world has a purpose in life. It's our job to find out what that purpose is.
CTE is the backbone of America.
We live because people build things. We live because people make things. We live because there are people out there that can do something. And career and technical education teaches you how to do something.
Ever since 1997, I've never been out of work, and I can attribute that to construction. And if you perform and you do good, there's always good.
You're talking about blue-collar worker. The students that are graduating through our program are making anywhere between $1,500 and $2,000 a week. So I don't know if that's blue collar. It's a little bit more than blue collar, but we're real busy, and there's a need in industry right now for these individuals.
Just this project alone right now, the Performing Arts Center Orlando, we have about 140 guys, all crafts combined, working, and there's only 10 people right now under the age of 25.
We need to not restrict our children and how they can participate in the great American dream, and this is part of it.
I thought that was important to you so that you would be aware of where, what colleagues are feeling about construction. And what promising, more importantly, what promising careers we have in the commercial industry, pipeline industry. You'll notice I keep mentioning those three because we know very well that the commercial construction industry is depressed, but we're also very hopeful, and we see indicators, economic development indicators around the state that tell us things are going to change. We're very optimistic about what's going to happen with regard to infrastructure. And why it matters to this community is we're going to need very well-equipped, well-trained construction professionals and pipeline industry and alternative energy industry leaders. And again, the reason I highlight pipeline and energy is those particular professions require the same kind of skills, and so the same kind of training, same type of stackable certifications. And so we've been very deliberate in our outreach with Western Refinery, Kinder Morgan, BSNF Railway, and PNM. So that's the connection and the employment piece. So hopefully I've given you a good sampling of what what brought us here to today. So today we're celebrating that the W.F. Kellogg Foundation thought this worthy enough to support with my organization with a $150,000 planning grant for the next 18 months. That grant is so that I can partner with those who want to rethink how do we align a system so that we're sure that young people are best prepared within the Gallup-McKinley region to continue effective internship programs, pre-apprenticeship programs, and apprenticeship programs and employment on a much quicker and a very practical continuum. And so with that, I'd like to mention some of the work this grant was awarded, by the way, in June of this year. And so I'd like to highlight some of the momentum and the partnerships that hopefully will matter to you. Clearly, Dr. Dyer is a major player. We're anchored with regards to our connection with the Navajo Nation here. I'm so thrilled again to see Ron Curtis, who's the senior analyst for the Navajo Nation Workforce Development Initiative. He's brought to the table a very important component to bring in the Navajo Youth Council, because we think it's very important that the future Navajo Nation leaders be a part of this initiative, help shape it as we move forward. We also have, the Navajo Tech University. I've met with Dean Agabaji, and we've had discussion with Virgil House, J. Michael Crank, Jeff Davies, and we're in the process there of establishing a memorandum of agreement so that we can begin to prioritize what this planning year would accomplish. There's low-hanging fruit like dual credits that we feel are going to be the quicker initiatives that we can expedite. There are components of reestablishing what a really highly respected by employers student resume would look like at the high school level. And Superintendent Cipetti and Gary Schuster are working with us as recently as last week to decide what priorities we will give, what schools we will focus on. Of course, the Kellogg Foundation wants assessments done and benchmarks in this work. So we're going to need to identify quantifiable components of this work, checkpoints of this work, and we're diving into the development of those things. I've mentioned the employer base, and I think it's so important that you understand. These have not been easy conversations. This is not traditional, as you know better than I. And so we think it's imperative that the employers be included, that they be involved in developing these resumes, their HR professionals identifying where's the disconnect when your applicants apply. So Gallup Land Partnership, Adam Weekly, has been very involved in the concept of this development. Why? Because he has interested investors. As you know, they've made a huge investment in the 26,000 acres that they've recently purchased around the university. Adam was public. It's because of this promising conversation that their organization has decided to go forward the purchase of those 26,000. So I want you to grasp that although I'm not dropping a solution in your midst. There are promising, important partners who are engaging in a very deep think tank about how to make this work. And so that's what I want to convey to you. And the differences, employment, and attraction for future economic development. So I also would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge one of my colleagues, Ralph Mora, in the audience. Ralph is an NCCER certified instructor, apprenticeship coordinator, and skills assessment proctor. And so he engages in the day-to-day logistics with the education partners we're involved in. So he will be available for the day, happy to answer questions. I'm here throughout the day. And what's most important is that you help take ownership. Go back to your respective networks, go back to your respective institutions, and start to ask questions about how you can get involved. How can you support an internship program? How can you support a pre-apprenticeship? The other individual I would like to highlight is Dr. Michael Stanton. He is with Innovate Educate, which is about skills assessment and work keys. They are our newest partner in this partnership of communicate and employ. We know that work keys assessments are extremely valuable tools, but we also want to make sure that we integrate them in a system that results in our students being better qualified. So we're in that conversation, and they're another component or partner. So hopefully, I know I've thrown a lot at you, but hopefully it's encouraging news to you, and this is all about ownership of the community taking ownership as well. So I thank you. I look forward to working with you and reporting back to you at different opportunities. So have a wonderful conference, and thank you, Dr. Dyer and Sunny, for inviting me.
In case you didn't hear, Vicky Mora is the CEO of the New Mexico Building Education Foundation. It's a nonprofit education foundation affiliated with the Associated General Contractors of New Mexico. Focus on linking education, workforce, and economic development assets for the commercial construction industry. Thank you, Vicky. And thank you for introducing the two gentlemen. I can feel a lot of tension in this room. Maybe it's the burritos. We want to run a 2-minute clip. We're all going to move to the aisles and down on the floor. We have 2 minutes of yoga. Is everybody ready for that? I didn't think so. But we're going to move on. It's only proper to introduce some of the people in the audience. And just so that you'll know that, that these people are here to not only speak but participate in our summit. And I want to start again by looking over here. And if I skip you, please don't be offended. I'll get to you sometimes through the day. L.D. Lovett is our division director, and originally he's from Reno, Nevada. Melissa Collins, who's our administrative assistant with the division. We also have our council delegate, Leonard Sosi. You guys can stand up. Please, we want to know who you are. Thank you for being here. This afternoon, he'll be addressing the group here. We also have Sandra Jeff, who has just recently has been elected to the McKinley County School Board. Can you stand up, please? Sandra Jeff. While we're on McKinley County Schools, I saw Priscilla Manolito, the president of the board. Thank you. Mr. Ralph Richards will also be speaking tomorrow. There you go. That's the way to loosen up. Ms. Virginia Chavez, the councilwoman from Zuni. That's it for now. Dr. Isaac, I'm sorry. Dr. Isaac from NTU. Yeah, thank you. We're going to go on to the our first speaker. And our first speaker is an associate professor from this campus. And I got looking around the internet. Man, there's a lot of stuff on you, Al. But I'm only going to give the good stuff on you, okay? And maybe some things that you didn't know about Al Henderson. Did you know that in the 70s, he was the all-star guard for the Gallup Bengals? And then he took his athletic skills and became a bull rider. And he was the first Chizzy on the Navajo Reservation. Then he smartened up, went to school, graduate of Northern Arizona University and University of New Mexico, received his master's in economics, and was economic director for the Navajo Nation back in the 80s. And today, he works for us here, and that started back in 2009. We stole him from Northern Arizona. He's been the coordinator for the Rural Entrepreneurial Institute, and I misplaced his bio, so I'm going to just wing it. And just recently, he was appointed to the advisory for the Navajo Nation Economic Development. He was appointed by President Russell Begay. So I think that's enough on you, Al. Come on up here. Al Henderson.
One of my Facebook friends, which I absolutely did not want to get on, I had to, and I'll give you a story about that. Used to say every time they get introduced, okay. So those are some of the languages that I learned on Facebook. Very quickly, I want to thank Dr. Dyer. I want to thank the former director also, Sylvia and Andrew, because these are two fine leaders that I've had the opportunity to work for and with. And they have given me the latitude and the freedom to do what I call free thinking. Okay, in the academic world, it's called, release time. So thank you very much for that opportunity. And I've been on a community ground level tour of the Navajo Nation all summer long. And the reason for that is because one of the projects that I was working on is to set up the Rural Entrepreneur Institute to deal with the huge number of entrepreneurial talent in this lower Colorado Plateau, the Four Corners area. We were only part of a group here funded by the Johnson Scholarship Foundation from West Palm Beach to set up the Rural Entrepreneur Institute. The outgrowth, there's two very main important outgrowth of that effort. Change Labs, which is really an advisory group that I was working with that told me, don't stay with the program up on the hill. Bring it down to the community level. So we took it down to the community level, and there's a young lady by the name of Heather Fleming who has championed the cause to pick that program up and really working with college students. Kellogg Foundation funded the program last year, and this year they funded it again because you have a swell of collegiate talent that's ready to burst the bubble of high technology and computer world. There's going to be NTU, we've got two NTU representatives here with whom we are planning, and they're going to host I think this is the fifth, am I correct? The fourth or the fifth? That's the fifth. Three, this will be the third with Change Labs. And so keep your eyes open on it, and they're just right under the radar of the nation's political prescription for workforce development. So what we're doing here is tapping into a whole new body of highly skilled young Navajos who we are trying to attract back. The second project that I've been working on this summer is to get on the road with the Dene Chamber of Commerce, of which I'm a board member. And it's actually an outgrowth out of this university because there's no place and no home for the Dene Chamber of a sort. There has never been a Navajo Chamber of Commerce. There's been talked about it. As far as I can remember, there's been about three. This will be the first, the fourth effort to try and organize the small business community and the entrepreneurs. We deliberately took 2.5 years to set up the foundation so that it does not fall flat on its face. So we're very deliberate. We also brought in some new members. It's not male dominated anymore. It's going to be women dominated because we have at least new members that came in that we're grooming to take over. They're all pretty young and business owners. All the board members have gone through the trials and tribulations of starting their own business, some with absolutely no money, just a lot of support and the sheer will. And some of them are true and tried, like Mike Nelson and Richard Mike, and there's quite a number of them, Harry Sloan. Very, very faint. A little bit of information on the small business community. In the 2010 census, self-employed surveyed individuals throughout the counties in which the Navajo Nation exists. There's about three or four counties. Three in Arizona, two in New Mexico, and one in Utah. 1,710 declared themselves as self-employed. The Navajo Nation itself, 1,710 said they were self-employed. The Navajo Nation population at that time was somewhere around 170,000. So only 1% of the total population are doing it for themselves. Yet the banner from generation to generation, the teaching from generation to generation is to do it yourself. These are instructions from the traditional Navajo people. That's what I was taught. So I'm thinking back in those times, and why is it that we have such a small population group, minuscule, that is being asked by the nation's leadership, the president and the vice president, that the way towards sustainability and future growth prospects, now that the energy sector is beginning to take a nosedive, high unemployment, we're still dealing with poverty, reports abound on that particular score, and small business should save the day. It's going to be a long road. So now, the Net Chamber of Commerce, I went on the road, and we went ahead and we're doing recruitment and promotion. I just want to let people know. Everywhere I went, there was one gentleman from the nation's leadership, Councilman Leonard Sosi, was always there. That is where the action is, ladies and gentlemen, is breaking bread, talking with people at the community level, at the grassroots level. And I learned a lot. One thing that I learned is that the language of business in the Navajo mind and the Navajo language is virtually missing. One of the key factors of production, land, labor, capital, and in one case, technology and entrepreneur, which I add emphasis on, is control. The land is controlled by the predominantly non-English speaking population. So we have a debate going on between the permittees who have a call by traditional use rights, grazing, business, housing development, etc. And they never could come to an agreement. So one of the key things that we learned along the road is that the land leasing processes, the decision making, is very, very lengthy. Lending, the concept of finance and money and investment, virtually missing. but we practice it. We practice it and we know it, but we don't know the technicality of that particular type of concept. So the other thing that I learned is always three or four people who are already asking, Shea, where is Nantai? My baby, my leader. Did Adenik Ashinijiyata Nzondorle? Talk to us in Navajo. That would be really, really good if you talk to us in Navajo. Talking about economic development, community development. So there's a body of information that I learned during the summer. Then all of a sudden, I got a call from the president's office asking me to become a member of the Navajo Council of Economic Advisors. Well, here's my chance. You know, I want to go ahead and put my best foot forward. So I accepted the appointment. But guess what? It's all voluntary. It's all voluntary. Voluntarism, which I've done for many, many years, is a good occupation. You do something, you know, because you love to do it, to help people. Some people are always thinking, you know, if you go ahead and get this big appointment, they must be getting paid left and right. I wonder how much. I'm sorry to say I haven't gotten a penny out of it. None of the advisors have gotten a penny on it. But we're willing to think freely with them, for them, and advise. We have no power. The advisor has no power. We only are able to go ahead and advise the president and the vice president and flag areas that we think we can go ahead and have the decision makers, the likes of the council representative here and his colleagues, to debate it and hopefully pass some of the recommendations. So we have no power. So don't call me if you want any favors. Please carry the word. I'm getting a lot of calls. So I'm begging for mercy now. Another thing that I want to share with you, and this is very personal. I have been very, very concerned about newspaper publications. In this whole area, two words that comes up year after year after year: poverty and high unemployment. I never seem to really understand it or figure out a way to tackle it. So this is going to be one of my recommendations, Councilman Delegate Leonard Sosi. We don't have a way of measuring how we gauge success from one year to the next with all the money, the millions of dollars that the council and also the federal government commits to the Navajo Nation. We don't have a scoreboard. We don't have any outcome. We think we know, but we don't have the figures or the data to measure what it is. So the best thing we need to know how to gauge ourselves as to making good decisions and telling people that we are making some success and headway is, I think, to reduce poverty and to track the unemployment rate fairly high. There's a lot of debate on exactly what the true unemployment rate is, but I don't want to take too much time, but I do want to share with you a few things. One of the things that happens when you're called upon to do something exciting as working on the Council of Economic Advisors is there's some homework involved. So I said, well, the quickest way to reduce unemployment is to put people to work. And the quickest way I know how is to still depend upon the federal funding, especially for NAHASDA, HUD program. You've got a high demand for housing. Total new construction, repair and remodeling to the tune of about maybe 60,000 homes annually. And there's never been a dent as far as I can remember. The second thing is workforce development funds. Funds reported in the newspaper have turned back in many instances. So I'm thinking of all the meetings that I've gone through, the rules and regulations seems to be a key area where we could go ahead and tackle and maybe suspend some of the rules, maybe rewrite some of the rules, maybe amend. So I was candidly free-thinking, and some guy come up to me and he says, Al, you're barking up the wrong tree. You're barking up the wrong tree. It's not going to be possible to do that. Because they're already subscribed to the status quo, right? So I'm thinking, maybe this person is right. Maybe it's not possible. So I went into history. And during my college days, I remember reading about the Navajo Hopi Rehabilitation Act of 1950. And here's a copy. UNM does not have a copy, so I had to get an interlibrary loan. And this is a fascinating read from the West Virginia University. They had a copy of it. I'm going to go ahead and bear with me. I'm going to go ahead and share with you an interesting discussion between the subcommittee chair of the then Interior and Insular Affairs, Indian Affairs. This dialogue was a discussion on Senate Bill 2363, an exchange between a person who has worked at Ganado Mission, a gentleman by the name of Dr. Salisbury, and there is a dialogue, Q&A, it's a hearing, and Senator Watkins is asking a lot of questions. So bear with me a moment here. Dr. Salisbury, I was telling Senator Watkins at lunch today that Mrs. Salisbury does most of the purchasing of supplies for the Ganado Mission, which happens to be a hospital and education component back in 1948. This is about the same, about two months before I was born, this exchange took place. And that sort of thing. We had an old uneducated Indian. That Indian is Navajo, who is certainly a keen businessman, come in and he had a large number of cattle. We wanted to have 30 or 40 cattle to put in our deep freeze. And she told him that she would like to buy his cattle. Well, he said, I will be glad to sell them. And then being a bit Scott, she said, of course, you know, this is a school maintained for the Indians and a hospital maintained for the Indians. And we think you should make a little difference in the price in this case, so said Mrs. Salisbury. He said, this is the Navajo Indian said, I have no children in school and I am not in the hospital and I want the best price I can get. The exchange goes on. Senator Watkins, was he an Indian of full blood? Dr. Salisbury, he was a full blood and does not speak a word of English. Senator Watkins, that sounds like a lot of cattle for one Indian to have. Do you know the history of this particular Indian? Dr. Salisbury, it is a very interesting bit of history. The first time I met him, he came into the office at Ganado and said I had a little money through an interpreter that I would like to put in the vault for a few days. And so I said, all right, you lay it out here on the counter and we will count it and I will give you a receipt for it. And whenever you want to come back with your receipt, you can have it. He had it folded in a handkerchief, and he laid that handkerchief out on the counter, unfolded it, and on top of that, he was a $1,000 bill, and under it, 50 tens. When he saw his stock reduction was getting serious, he went over to New Mexico and bought 9 sections of land, for which I think he paid cash. He leased 20 sections, and we now run a herd of about 1,000 head of his own cattle over on that land. The Indians are not exactly dumb. Now, I want to go ahead and have you think about that. And here's what I was thinking about when I read those exchanges. Number one, we were told by some presenters to the first meeting of the Council of Economic Advisors that we really need to go ahead and have our own Navajo bank. And the banks that we deal with are very expensive, very hard to negotiate with border town banks. These are business people that are talking. And so we're looking at the possibility of that. I have my personal opinion on it. I happen to think that if you look hard enough in your own backyard, the answer is there. The concept of home gardening in economics is a new area, and I think that's where we need to focus on. That's going to be my advice to the president. We have a lot of opportunities, a lot of assets that we can go ahead and drop a few merchandise for entrepreneurs to further develop and grow. That's another area of my advice. The construction trades, I think Vicky talked about it. That's got to be immediate, number one, construction, all types. There are teams of constructions of Navajo crew that are all over the country, and they come back for vacation visit, and they go back out. Nation building is an absolute prime position for the Navajo Nation, I think. When Navajo wins, everybody wins. The reason why I say that is because I had a conversation with some people. Why is there always a contentious position between the border towns and the Navajo Nation? And it is true. History is full of it. But I said, I'm going to tell you a story of what one prospective competitor of mine, when I was going to do some economic development work, I called a person, my competitor, and I said, look, I'm going to be coming into your business, and I just want you to know that I have no hard feelings. I like you as a person. We've been friends for a long time, but I'm going to take a piece of the pie. He says, Al, come on in. The pie is bigger than you and I. We need more of people like you and I. So to me, I think there's ample opportunity for everybody to win because we need to go ahead and do something beyond what some of the passages that I just read to you imparted on me. Number one, relationship building. It's a very fundamental key between two people. We always say we're a diverse community and multicultural in this area. But how is our relationship? Is it very weak? Do we talk to one another? Do we greet one another? Do we support one another? Very key questions. Trust. Do we trust people? Do we trust one another? And how might we go ahead and perpetuate our trustworthiness between one each other? The Indian who doesn't speak a word of English was very trusting of the trader and gave him some money to keep for him. You know, where is that kind of trust? Do we still have it? Honor ourselves as people. To be honored is to be able to go ahead and tell the truth. I always tell my students, don't ask me a question. And they ask me, why do you don't want us to ask you a question? I said, well, because I'll tell you the truth. And sometimes the truth hurts. Entrepreneurship is abound. It's everywhere. I'm going to go ahead and leave you with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Ken, is your name Z? If you look at your agenda, this morning's speakers is kind of focusing on the challenges of developing a skilled workforce in the region. After the speakers, we're going to have a panel. They should be sitting here. Some of them are present, and then we can start taking questions from the audience. The intention is to come up with solutions for this morning's theme of developing a skilled workforce in the region. Some sort of an action or a solution And at the end of the 2 days, Mr. Lovett and his staff will summarize the summit, and hopefully we can make that available in writing. So, thank you very much, Al. That was good. The next speaker, I looked on Twitter, Facebook, internet. I couldn't find nothing on him. He is has close to 30 years of professional, executive, and financial management experience. His areas of expertise: strategic planning, executive management, project planning, management, staff leadership development, and team building, budgeting and financial management, general consulting, and problem solving. Received his bachelor's in biology from Colorado State University, master's of public administration, Penn State University. Currently, he's the executive director of Gallup Housing Authority and a former county manager, McKinley County Government. Mr. Richard Kuntz.
I just want to say I'm honored to be here. There's a lot of familiar faces here in the crowd, and I was just wondering if Ralph is going to give us some breakfast burritos tomorrow. I'm just joking with you, Ralph.
We have meatloaf.
Okay, well, that's fine. That'll work, too. I just wanted to cover some things. Look in your packet, and under my bio there's several things stapled on, and I'm going to be real fast because we don't have that much time. And some of this stuff you already know, so there's no sense in trying to educate you on it. I just recognize John Hunt over there. I worked with him. Okay. I worked with him in the chairman's office back under Peter McDonald. Real quick little side note. One time we were taking a standing in a meeting, and the chairman came in, and John told me, he says, Richard, he says, you need to kind of lean down a little bit. And as John was standing there leaning down, and I said, why are you doing that? He says, the chairman don't like nobody to be taller than him. So I looked around at all his aides, and they were all shorter, like Al, you know. And some of them wore 4-inch heels to try to look as tall as they were. But I remember that, John. It was his first advice to me was, I know you're not a political person, and you need to be able to get around in this environment. So this is my advice to you. Whenever you're in a meeting and you're in a photo shoot with the chairman, make sure you lean down so you're not taller than him. So I thought, that's interesting. I never thought about those kind of things. Although I thought Peter McDonald could have been a chess master if he ever got into playing chess. He was an incredibly brilliant, brilliant man. But down to my outline, three things. Think about this. If you take notes, right on the top of this outline, focus 3 to 5. Focus 3 to 5. And the reason why I say focus 3 to 5 is because usually we can only retain 3 things at a time. You go more than 3, you forget, okay? And then if you notice, my outline is like 3 things with 3 supporting things, okay? All right, number one is, what do employees need? You're talking to a guy here who's been managing for 30 years, okay? Managing people in this area for 30 years, and close to 20 years with the Navajo Nation government, 10 years in nonprofit housing, 2 years at the county, 6 years with Bread of Life Christian Bookstore in the private sector, and then now my last 2 years with Gallup Housing Authority. I manage numerous people, primarily Native American, okay, because this area is 78% Native American, okay? What do they need? They need, I'm going to be brass tacks with you. So you Native Americans, if you get offended by some of what I'm saying, that's okay. You can talk to me. Let me know what you think later, okay? Or write a letter to the editor about me. Number one is this. We Native Americans tend to lack some basic skills that inhibit us all the way through our professional work life. Number one, reading and comprehension. What do you do when you hire somebody and they're supposed to First thing, they got to read a policy manual that's 30 pages thick, and they can't read it. They don't understand, they don't comprehend well. So that's number one. Number two is writing. I remember I had an executive assistant who had worked for like 15 years in several executive assistant positions, and I said, can you read this report real quick and draft me a summary or draft me a memo? And she sat on it for a week and 2 weeks, and I said, you know, I need that thing pretty soon. And she finally admitted to me, she goes, I can't write very well. I said, well, just go ahead and write whatever you can. Just think what you think, just type it down. Don't worry about spelling or nothing. And she typed it, and her grammar was very poor and everything. And she brought it to me, and she was somewhat embarrassed. I said, okay, let me make some corrections, I'll give it to you. Did you know by the time her and I quit working, she could read reports and write summaries? Perfect. It took time, and you had to work with a person like that. Did I downgrade her? Did I make her feel stupid? No. I said, let's work on this. Let's fix this problem. See, so identifying the problem, the earlier speaker, the lady, I can't remember your name, I'm sorry, I've got short-term memory, Vicky, she said, you know, you have to kind of come down to a certain level, and you have to work with them. Sometimes it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. And the other one is base knowledge is the basic three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic, okay? Those are the main things I see that handicaps a lot of people in this area. Is that we don't pick it up in the beginning, and with our school system, we just pass people on because we're afraid to offend their self-esteem. But you're doing them an injustice. You're doing them an injustice by not teaching them those basics, okay? What are some of the other basics? You know, in this day and age, I'll just mention that, you know, the young people and in this university here at Navajo Tech and other places, they're very technology-oriented. Everything requires technology nowadays. You cannot, almost every job you go to you have to have technology. When I was at the county, we went into that energy conservation mode, and we were gonna get all these energy feature savings in the county. And then they said, you just have to sit up here in the ivory tower of the county and program the heating and cooling from the ivory tower. Well, guess what? We did not have anybody skilled in maintenance to even use a computer. See, so we jump all the way from, you just go to the corner and turn the dial up or down, to programming from one central place, every county building's heating and cooling. Nobody had that background. See, nowadays people have to have those kind of backgrounds. So there again, you're going back down to the high school and junior high level, you gotta teach them those kind of things even before they get out of high school. Because when they come to work, they're gonna need that, okay? The other one is essential skills and abilities. Essential skills and abilities. For instance, I hired a lady, we do interviews, we define what their job is all about, and because of the reading, writing, and lack of skills in certain areas, we basically said, you know what, we're gonna give you a test. It's like, I haven't taken a test since high school, and the lady's maybe 40 years old, okay? Okay, fine, just relax, it's not like, you know, you're taking that ACT test or nothing. So basically, three things. You read a two-page report, you write me a summary, and you do a basic spreadsheet. Here's some data, reformat it this way, total it up, you know, all those things, do a little projection. Real simple task. Almost every person we give that test to flunks. Now, is it super hard? No. Because I have a maintenance guy test it to say, is this too hard for you to understand? No. See, my point is, we're gleaning out a bunch of people who don't have those basic skills. And you have to do that if you want to be successful in your work environments, okay? So I know people say, boy, Richard, you're really hardcore. Well, hey, when I took over Gallup Housing Authority, we were in trouble status. We were about being ready to be given away to Northern Housing Authority. People had given up on us. We had delinquency at 45% of the tenants were delinquent. You know, it was bad. And HUD wanted us to have 98% vacancy, occupancy, and we were down at 82 or 83. I mean, it was in bad shape. And so we couldn't afford to bumble along. You know, we had to get skilled people in there, people with a good solid knowledge base, and the skills and everything to do what we needed them to do. The next thing they need is they need desired values and work ethic. That's a big issue for me. I've worked for 30 years, and it's really hard. I don't know how many times I've had people come to me, non-Navajos come to me and say, Richard, what is it? You know, they won't show up on time. Every time there's a powwow or a fair, they want to take off, you know. And they said, I mean, I had one contractor. Some of you know him. He's deceased. He's a local contractor who was in the contracting business for many, many years. If I say his name, you guys will know who I am, yeah, know who he is. And he was one of the Navajos who first got into business. Al, I know you know who I'm talking about. But he used to tell me, he says, Richard, I hire one crew extra. I said, why? He says, because they're not reliable. He says, I have a contract. I get a big contract with the federal government or the school district or the Navajo Nation, and I have time is money. He says, they don't understand that concept. Just like I was saying, there's some concepts the Navajos don't grasp because it's not built into their living through time and history. He says, so I hired three crews and I have an extra one because I know every Monday after payday, half of them are going to be missing. So I just have extra ones there to help out. He says, by the end of the next payday, 2 weeks later, then he says, they're all back on duty, then I pay them, the same thing happens all over again. And I was like, man, I can't believe that. Well, you know, I worked for forestry department when I was in college in the summers, same thing happened. The whole forestry crew, payday comes, half of them disappear. And slowly, one by one, they come back. By the end of 2 weeks, you'd have the whole crew back. See, so there is skills, there is a value system. There's some value system and work ethic things that need to be worked on. And those are things that I've learned after working for 30 years in this area with my own people, a lot of them, okay? Now, how? Jobs need to be clearly defined. When I came to Gallup Housing Authority, there was no job descriptions. So how could you hold anybody accountable if you didn't have good job descriptions? The other thing is, I'll go to people and ask them, well, what is this? They say, you know, I want to fire this guy. He's just lazy. He don't do his work. I said, well, what is his job? I don't really know. All I know is he's not doing a good job. You know, and or they decide every morning, this is your job for the day, you know. And I said, you know, we need to have, not just at Gallup Housing Authority, I've seen that at the county, I've seen that at the Navajo Nation, everywhere. Jobs need to be really defined well. And what I mean by that, too, is not just this something you copied from the BIA or the IHS, you know, but sit there and say, what does this job really require? Because a lot of times there's 15 pages of job description, if it's a BIA job description, and yet it doesn't really tell what the job is supposed to be doing. Worst case, if you hand somebody a job description that's 15 pages and they don't read well, they're not going to understand it anyway, right? So that's the other issue I see a lot with workers is step number one is, do they really even understand what their job is? What are you actually paying them for? And then if they don't do their job well, then why are they going to be let go if they're not doing their job well? Sometimes they don't even know what their job is because nobody's explained it clearly to them. So for new positions, the way I look at it is you have to look for qualified people, people that meet the things you need to have the base knowledge. For instance, I'll use this little side note. Don't take a secretary working for an attorney, and then she takes a few paralegal trainings and everything, and then one day the attorney leaves and she says, can I apply for the job? Because the base knowledge requires a law degree, right? So, you know, don't get me wrong, not everybody can move up the ladder, but some people think that way. Especially in government. They think whoever's been there the longest gets the next shot. Well, sometimes they're not prepared for the next shot. If it's possible to help them reach the next shot, yeah, give them every opportunity. And make it require training for them to move up. But they can't just say, hey, you know, Richard, I'm next in line. I've been here 15 years. Everybody else has been here less than that. So I'm going to be I'll just use the term county attorney from now on, you know, or city attorney. You know, you can't do that. Certain positions require base knowledge. That's why you have to define it real well, okay? So for new positions, hire people that are qualified. Like I said, we do that little test thing, you know, to make sure they know how to do spreadsheets, to make sure they know how to read and write and those kind of things. The other one is for existing employees. This is the thing I see the least of. I think in the government, there's probably more of this going on. In the private sector, probably less. especially around here. I'm just being honest and blunt. How many of you are from the private sector here, just out of curiosity? Okay, how many of you are government sector, basically? Okay, all right, just checking. Okay, what I see primarily is there is a lot of training offered through the government sector. Sometimes it's training maybe, I don't really need, you know. But what we do is we try to find exactly the training that fits exactly what those people need, and then we get it for them. You have to invest in educating and training your people. Everything changes. There's so much change every day. I mean, I get 30 emails a day. Latest changes in HUD regulation, latest changes in legislation from HUD, latest changes from the state. You know, make sure you do this by such and such date, otherwise your grant can be suspended, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting there going, you know, do I have time to read all this stuff? And then not only that, but then I got to train all the people down the line, the program staff, the worker bees, everything else. You know, it's hard. So you have to continuously invest money in training people. Otherwise, you will fail. That's all there is to it. That clock's not working, so I got unlimited time, I guess. Now, the other thing is, and I think these, okay, he says I still have 15 minutes. Okay, I'm done pretty good. I got 2 out of 3 done, so. Here's the thing. I think around here, the biggest thing I see as a person trying to manage things, operations, I mean, I used to put together the travel budget, okay? None of the people working for me at the time I took over had college degrees. They were all just high school educated. So I was like, wow. And I have to put together a travel budget, you know, $500 million or more. I know that's not as big as the state or the federal government, but still, that's a lot of budget to put together, okay? So we trained them. We trained them, and, you know, we had to deal with all of that. So one of the things I just want you to understand is that I've been dealing with people for a long time, and one of the biggest issues I see is you have to define your work culture. You have to define what you expect beyond just the job description. For instance, because of the positions I've been, I've never had the luxury of just sitting around and chit-chatting all day long, okay? I mean, I have very limited time. So somebody comes in, they say, Richard, can I talk to you just a minute? And I'm sitting there like an hour later, they're going on and on and on and on. I'm like, can you please get to the point? See, that's a culture, work culture thing. Well, we thought you said you had open door policy. I said, yeah, I have open door policy within limits. So what do I say? I create simple rules, like for instance, if they come in and say, Richard, can I talk to you? And I'm in the middle of trying to prepare a budget by Friday, and it's now Thursday afternoon. You know, I put my hand up and I say, is this a 5-minute conversation or is this gonna take 30 minutes or more? They say, I said, because last time you took 45 minutes of our time and then the issue only took 2 minutes to talk about. See, and then I say, okay, they say, okay, 5 minutes, promise. And then see what happens is I say, if it's more than 30 minutes, then schedule an appointment with my assistant. See, because I can't afford to waste time. See, and that's a work environment culture thing, right? So now I have one at Gallup Housing Authority because I have a couple employees that like to come in and chit chat and jibber jabber. And I say, just the facts, ma'am. No jibber jabber. See, and they're understanding now what that means. Is just the facts mean gets to the point. You know, when you come in here, if you have your document that you need me to look at real quick and I'm gonna sign it up, you're recommending to me you wanna do this and it just the facts what you want me to do and then sign it, I'll listen. But if you're gonna go on and on and on and on and on about how hard it was to get this, you know, this quote, you know, you wouldn't believe what I had to go through and on and on and on. I'm just like, I don't have time for that. Okay? Not being uncaring or mean. But there's work culture things like that. And in your packet, you're going to see some of them. I asked them to put these in there, like 10 things that require zero talent. These are how you raise things. Okay? How you raise things. Sometimes I sit there and I look at someone and I say, I don't know how you were raised. You know, I was raised, you get up early, you get to school, you know, you get all your homework done, blah, blah, blah. You know, my dad, that... I can't remember that video they showed where it says, go to college, or otherwise you're going to be just digging ditches. You know, that's exactly what my dad said to me. As a matter of fact, on mornings before school, he'd drive me down to the latest road, BIA road project. He'd say, see those four guys standing there? And there's three holding a shovel and one digging, and one guy standing there with his hands on his hips because he's the supervisor. He says, that's the only kind of job you're going to get if you don't go to college. He says, you're going to be stuck forever here if you don't do something to educate yourself. So I don't care whether it's college. His goal was I should be a doctor, a teacher, or a lawyer, one of those three. Or if you couldn't make it, then at least get some job skills that will make you a meaningful, productive person. See, that's how he raised us. So these are the same things. These are basically, as you notice my comment at the bottom says, as manager or supervisor for people for close to 30 years, I would say these are the same things that I look for in my employees. And then the thing is, I don't just post it up on my wall and say, I hope somebody sees it while they're walking by. I mean, I've seen people sitting with a sign above them saying, honesty and integrity is our highest value, and then they're stealing you blind. See, so I sit down with all of them, the lowest on the totem pole all the way to the top, and I say, let's go through these things and discuss them. Because we want them to absorb them. We want them to agree with them. We want them to live them, okay? Now, another one I've showed on there is, and this is just to kind of entertain you. Come on, guys, let's get this sidewalk done. You didn't get the color version. It's much more pretty. But always going the extra mile. See, how would you like it? And this has probably happened to you in terms of customer service in this town. Somebody says, sorry, 5 o'clock, and they shut the window on you and walk out, and you're like, I've been standing here for 2 hours, and I came all the way from Chinle, and you slammed the window on my face. See, and so those kind of things, going the extra mile, what does that mean? I mean, in our thing, if we have a sewer line blow up on the North Housing Development, do my walkers get up and say, oh, quitting time, 5 o'clock, let's go check out and leave the sewer just running out in the street all night long until tomorrow morning, 8 o'clock? No. They have enough work ethic to say, you know, we're going to work here all night if we have to get this fixed. And you have to instill those kind of culture in your company to be the best. That's what I'm looking at. Be the best in everything. The customer service, work product, or whatever. You know, be the best. We're not shorting for. You see job description evaluation, sometimes I'll say poor, fair, good, you know, above average, excellent. And unfortunately, a lot of people are just shooting for the minimum. I say, well, they'll still pay me no matter what, so I'm just going to shoot for the minimum. And I say, you know what? You're right. I cannot fire you if you just do the minimum. But you know what? That's not who we are. Who are we? See, you have to put it back on them as a personal level. As what kind of man or what kind of woman are you? Are you a person of excellence or are you a person of get by with the minimum? See, those kind of values have to be instilled. And then last thing, and I think probably really, I personally think is second last thing, but I'll just maybe make this last. You have to make sure you have trained supervisors and managers, okay? If you put the wrong person in supervision or management, you are just ruining your organization. And a lot of times, I'm talking to government environments, a lot of times it's who's been there the longest is the next man up the totem pole. And sometimes that don't work. If you're planning to promote some people, let's say you're looking at three people that you eventually want to see them as a supervisor or manager, train them. Teach them how to supervise. Teach them how to manage. In this day and age, it's a nightmare. You have to know about sexual harassment. It's amazing to me how the qualifications for a procurement person and some of your high-level procurement positions locally is only a high school degree and 2 years of experience. When you read the procurement laws and rules and regulations, you almost have to be a lawyer. See? So you need to train people to make sure they can succeed. Don't train them for failure. Train them for success. But there it goes all the way back to number one, which is you got to know what base knowledge they need to do their job excellent. in an excellent manner. And the other thing is, you got it, same thing with managers. Managers, I see a lot of weak managers. They don't know how to deal with things. They don't know how to handle stuff. And they have a hard time thinking through things. Like, for instance, how can you expect a supervisor or a manager to handle a disciplinary issue when they haven't even read the personnel manual? Or they don't know all the P's and Q's of proper discipline. See, and a lot of times we don't train people for success. We just put them in there and say, okay, well, here's, I mean, did you know that we just finished revising our, what's called the ACOP, which is, stands for, it's the basically the Bible for public housing. Everything you need to know from all the way from being an applicant all the way to being you're evicted, everything. It's like 5 inches thick. See, and unfortunately, some people, you hire them, say, here's your Bible, and then you walk away. No. I mean, we say, here's your Bible, start reading, and they're like, whoa. And I say, we're going to get training for you. We're going to teach you from step one all the way through, and you're going to have to take this. And then we say, you know what? You will have to take a test at the end of 1 week of training. And you get a 70% or better, you get 2 chances to pass. Why do we do that? Because we want to make sure they know what they're doing. Not only for themselves, but for the tenants we serve and the applicants, and to lessen liability, so we don't get sued for messing up. See, so that's what we do, and we pay for it, and they get their certification. It's unbelievable how much their self-esteem will skyrocket when they get those tests passed. Someone will say, you know what, I got, Richard, I beat you on this one. You got 92%, and I got 96. I'm smarter than the boss. I said, great. I'm proud of you. I'm so proud of you. I knew you had it in you. See, all of my people are non-degree people. We turn Gallup Housing Authority around with local people and non-degree people. So just like the first speaker said, it doesn't require a degree all the time. Last thing is just, when I talk about instilling philosophy and instilling things, the last sheet is, it says 5 things. Every year I say, these are the things we need to focus on, either 3 things or 5 things, 3 things or 5 things. And I go through it with the board, I go through it with the employees, all of them top to bottom, and I say, these are the 5 things we're going to focus on. I said, we came from total chaos, totally failing, to surviving in year one and treading water. Now we came to where we're afloat, the ship's finally not sinking anymore, we're kind of chugging along, you know, like the Titanic, and now we say, we just need to avoid that iceberg, okay? Now I said, you know what, when I first came to work, I walked into the third board meeting, and I said, you know what, they said, what do you think, Richard, is this salvageable here? I said, yeah, it's going to be easy. I said, but you got to back me up 100%, and you're going to have to call me the fixer. I said, because I am the fixer, that's the only way I can fix this, is you got to let me do what I need to do to fix it. So they said, okay, we back you. I said, with the goal of becoming the premier housing authority in the state of New Mexico. See, they bought that, hook, line, and sinker. So you got to set something out there for the saying, you know what, we're climbing Mount Everest. We don't care what it takes, we're going to make it. See, and then you sell that to the staff. You make sure they understand what they have to do to become premier. We were substandard, now we're average, now we're moving to premier. And you have to tell them exactly what it means. Because they don't get off on these, oh, that sounds great, Richard. Yeah, we want to be a premier. Yee-hoo! You know, but you got to tell them exactly what it means. You were turning units here. Turning means they get them ready for leasing, releasing. The HUD standard is 14 days. Some of those units hadn't been turned for 2 years. So we went through the whole year capturing data, and I finally asked my maintenance supervisor, I said, what does your data tell you? She looks at me, she goes, and do I beat her up on it? I said, no, here, you need to analyze that. I'll give you a week to analyze it, and you need to figure out from that data what you need to do going into 2017. She still didn't get it. So when we finally met, one of the other staff got it. They said, what's your turn rate? And she goes, oh, you're right. HUD standard is 14, our turn rate averaged 34 days. Wow. So, but we got rid of all the old ones that have been sitting there forever. And so if we can just get our turn rate down to 21 or 14, then you're moving toward Primera. What's Primera? Bernalillo County's turn rate is 7 days. I said, so we're trying to move to standard of 14 coming from this worst case scenario to 14. Now you're to get to Primera is 7 or less. My young lady that handles delinquencies and occupancy, she already got to 95% occupancy, and she took 45% down to less than 1.5% in 1 year. I mean, that's cooking. You're kicking people out at the same time for not paying rent, and you're bringing them in to not only lower your delinquency rate, but raise the occupancy rate high. See? And that young lady's amazing. She just needed training. And she's smart. You give her the Bible, she would take it home and read it. So those are the kind of things you have to look at. And the one thing I'll just highlight on here is, number one, maintain good order to lessen disorder, disunity, chaos, confusion. Total disunity, total chaos, total disorder, total confusion when I got there. So this year, I said, we've been working for a year and a half to create some sense of order, get you guys educated. You guys know what it's like to ride the horse now here. And you've been running, you know, leading the stagecoach or the wagon and doing a good job. What you're down to now is this last thing. We need to maintain good order to lessen disunity, disorder, chaos, and confusion. So now if my maintenance supervisor, any of my managers comes to me and they start going helter-skelter, jibber-jabber, I listen for a few minutes, I say, maintain good order. And they go, I got it. I know what you mean. It's my fault. I let helter-skelter take over. I let scatterbrainness take over. I'm not focused, 3 to 5. I'm not maintaining good order. That's why I'm having these problems. See, so now we're learning this new philosophy for this year. So we can, and the other one is holding people accountable. Why do you hold people accountable? To build trust. I mean, I have to trust, let's say Carl's my housing manager and he's got to turn a unit in 7 days, and Gerald's my leasing agent, and he's saying, I have a tenant ready to go. I have a tenant. Where's the house? And Carl says, oh, no problem. I have it done by Friday. And then Carl goes and brings the tenant in, signs the lease with them, and goes down and finds the house is still not done. See, if you don't maintain accountability on Carl, see, he's going to miss the deadline. Gerald's relying on him with 100% trust that when he takes the tenant over there to go into their new unit, he's not going to walk in and find the toilet bowl still off the hole in the bathroom. See, we've had that happen. So I said, that's why you have to maintain accountability. You have to hold people accountable because at the bottom of the barrel, you have to have absolute trust that the people you're paying to do the work you ask them to do are doing it. And they're doing it in a high quality manner with excellence. So with that, I'll leave you with that. Hopefully what I said helped. And I look forward to seeing progress in this area. I agree with a lot of what Al said. And, you know, his talking about how sometimes the Native Americans out there, because they've been in a dependent state for so long, and the government has kind of put that culture in that state by the way they've dealt with them. I'm not blaming the government. I'm not blaming anybody. If I can make it out of the hood, they can make it out of their hood too. Because I grew up dirt poor, and I went on, and I've been highly successful. Okay. And so, and out of the same way, and I think all of us Native Americans can do that. We need to just move forward and quit feeling sorry for ourselves, quit making excuses, and get it done. Adding to what Al said, every article he reads about this area, unemployment, high unemployment, poverty, add to that, no jobs. There's no job creation right now. And third one is alcohol problem. We have to deal with all those things. Now we're talking about housing. If all these people are migrating into Gallup for a job and a good life, there has to be a place for them to live. And there has to be jobs. See, so we need to work on those things. And to me, that's the big issue. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Richard. Just to give you some information, Richard, I knew your mom and dad, and also an opportunity to work with your brother at NTUA. Excellent. Al, do you have any follow-up comments? We still have a little bit of time here before we move to the next speaker. Okay, Mr. Sage. Mr. Michael Sage is the Deputy Director, Greater Economic Development Corporation. He's going to be our last speaker for this morning before we go to panels.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michael Sage. I have the pleasure of serving as Deputy Director for the Greater Gallup Economic Development Corporation. And before I jump into my comments, I just want to give you a little bit of background on the EDC, who we are, our mission, and our goal and our long-term vision. So real quickly, the Greater Gallup Economic Development Corporation, we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We were formed in March 2012, brainchild of Mayor Jackie McKinney, and it was a new model for economic development where we took economic development out of City Hall. We contracted with the City of Gallup, and so EDC serves as the official economic development organization for the City of Gallup, and very recently we were able to extend that relationship with McKinley County, and so we serve as the economic development organization for the City of Gallup and McKinley County. The EDC executive director is Patty Lundstrom. We have a board of directors that is 7 members, and collectively our board members are all from the private sector. So we have a banker, we have an attorney, we have a hotelier, we have a construction. So we have good representation from the main sectors of the Gallup local economy. And together combined, our board has over 230 years of business experience. And so we use our board, we use their business expertise, we use our executive director's management skills to really move the organization forward. And so the mission of the EDC, we're not necessarily focused on retail or hospitality. We are focused on economic-based jobs. So our focus is on growing the pie. We're not interested in cutting the pie. Our approach is that if we grow the pie, then everyone has a bigger cut. So we focus on economic-based industries. Economic-based industries are employers, businesses that produce a product that is then sent out of the region and money comes back into the region. So that's kind of where we're focused on. Our primary goal, our primary efforts right now are working with Gallup Land Partners on what's known as the Energy Logistics Park. So in 2013, as Vicki indicated, Gallup Land Partners came into our community, was fortunate enough to buy 26,000 acres just west of here, north of here, south of here, pretty large land holdings. But one of the key assets was a 9,000-foot rail loop just north of Bentmore. And I'm not sure a lot of people know this, very few people know this, but that rail loop is actually in operation. We actually do coal transloading now. So we bring coal out of southern Colorado, out of Hesperus, Colorado. Coal comes down to southern Colorado, gets on 491. It's trucked down to our industrial park, offloaded, and then transloaded on the rail and shipped out. And so we got about 100 trucks of coal that come down into our community every day. And then on the backhaul, what they do is they go down the Rayman, pick up limestone, and then carry it back up for use in the power plants. So the Energy Logistics Park is all about taking advantage of our existing assets. And primarily with that, we're talking about transportation. So we're talking about the BNSF Transcon line. We're talking about Interstate 40. We're talking about US Highway 491. So we're talking about utilizing those assets. If we had to recreate those assets, the amount of money that would be required would be unimaginable, billions of dollars to recreate these assets. They're unutilized assets, and so we've been focusing on developing the industrial park, tying that into 491 with the investments that the state has put in terms of four laning, continuing to take advantage of that. So that's where our focus is on growing the economy, and then we think if we do that and we maintain that focus, everything else will naturally take care of itself. So our primary focus is on attraction. Secondarily, we've been looking at, we're looking at growing the economy, but we're also making sure that we don't forget what we have in our economy existingly. So we've very recently launched a business retention and expansion program. And with that, we've been looking at the top economic base employers in McKinley County. So we've been going out with them, we've been talking with them, picking their brain, letting them know that they are appreciated, that they are an important part of our community, that the tax base that they provide, the tax revenue they provide is integral for the services that local residents receive. And so with that, we've been crisscrossing the county. We've been out in Pruitt talking to the industries out there. We've been up to El Segundo. We've been out to Sacred Wind. So we've been traveling the county talking with our industry. And it's good because they tell us, you know what, man, no one comes out and talks to us. So it's good. It's good that you guys are here. And a lot of the times, it's just we don't speak. We just listen, right? And we go out there and we listen, and we hear what their issues are. And a lot of times, their issues are not that great. Yes, they have needs, and yes, they have issues. But a lot of times, it's small things. So, but as I segue, so EDC, we're an economic development organization focused on recruitment of economic-based jobs. We do have a BR&E component in which we focus on our existing industries, but through our BR&E outreach and through our BR&E engagement, we realize that there's certain pressures that exist or impacting our industries. And I think we see it in the newspaper today. I think we saw it in the newspaper yesterday. Cibola, the CCA prison in Milan, is set to close. 300 jobs October 1 are going to be gone overnight. And you still say, Michael, well, that's in Cibola County. Why are you worried about that? Because I know students here that are enrolled in UNM that actually work there. And so it's not, what happens there is not isolated. It ripples throughout the economy in our local area. So 300 economic-based jobs gone October 1. El Segundo coal mine, located in McKinley County, majority of county's revenues generated off that mine. Currently, when we went out there and we talked with them, they had a little over 300 employees. About 2 months later, they cut a third of that, right? So right off the bat, you got about 400 or 500 base jobs, economic base jobs that are set to disappear in this community probably here in the next few months. And who knows if they will ever return, right? And so that's why workforce becomes so critical, is that for economic development, workforce is an absolute piece. See, what we do is we work with the state in terms of recruitment opportunities. And the two biggest obstacles for economic development, one is often workforce, and two is the lack of infrastructure and ability of buildings. So we'll get these opportunities from the state saying, do you have a rail yard? Yes, we have a rail yard. Do you have proximity to I-40? Yes, we have proximity to I-40. Do you have a 100,000 square foot building I can move into tomorrow? Well, no, we don't. And you know, we do have the Gallup camper sales. That's about 30,000 square feet. And so, you know, when we do have those opportunities where we can say yes to rail, yes to interstate, yes to housing, or yes to space, the next part comes in your workforce. What are you producing currently? What kind of programs do you have? And how quickly can you tool up to do new programs that are going to make my business competitive in your region? So from the EDC standpoint, from economic development standpoint, the two biggest barriers, like I said, we see are lack of available buildings and workforce development. And so with workforce development, we've jumped into that arena because we had to. We partnered with UNM Gallup. We partnered with Vicky Mora, with AGC, through the Energizing the Workforce Initiative. And the whole point was to build capacity so that we can respond to these opportunities that present themselves. When we have opportunities to get a fish on the line, we can go back and say that not only do we have space, but we have a college institution, and we have folks here that are ready to build a program for you to exactly your specification, get you exactly what you need. So when we go out and talk with business, it's interesting because there's a shift going on. And I think a lot of that has to do with the wide expanse in our region, you know, the fact that people have to travel many miles to access our institutions. And so when we go talk with the industry out in Pruitt, when we go talk with the folks up there, you know, they say, you know, Gallup's an hour away. I don't want to send my guys an hour away because that's an hour there, an hour back, and it's too far. And so what industry is telling us is that bring the programs to us. Bring the training to us. The model of us having to go to the institution to access that training, that's not what they want to hear. That's not value added for the industry, right? When we go talk to industry out there, they say, we got the building. I'll give you the space. I'll bring my guys in here. Bring me the trainers. Put the trainers out here. That's where it makes sense for me That's where the value for business is for me. I don't want to send 20, 30 guys 2 hours, 3 hours away. I want those guys trained on site here. So it's very unique. You know, that's what industry is telling us. That's coming out of our core base industries. And so the key point is that when we talk with industry, it's almost like a 180, right? They want training out there. And that's the crux. Is how do we get that? How do we work with the partners in the audience, with our federal partners, with our college institutions, to be able to put a model forward so that where we can take the trainers out there and train them on site? Okay. Another thing that we're hearing with the coal mines, we had a chance to participate in a site selectors forum with the New Mexico Partnership. New Mexico Partnership is the recruitment arm for the state of New Mexico, and they do a site selectors forum every year. And so they bring in national site selectors into New Mexico, and local EDOs have a chance to sit down, present their projects, get critical feedback, be able to pick their brain. And so when we're up there, we were talking with site selectors, we were talking about El Segundo, the coal mines, right? The impact, what can we do? We got this workforce that is under pressure. We're gonna have these individuals that are gonna be leaving, and how do we capture them and retool them, retrain them, and get them back into the workforce? And I'm saying this because I'm hoping my partners can help us out there, is that what they told us, what the site selectors told us, is that in order to get ahead of this situation, we need to do a labor assessment. We need to do a labor assessment of that entire workforce within the coal industry, right? We need to be able to understand how many welders do we truly have that can come out of that facility? How many mechanics do we truly have that are operating? How many heavy loaders, CDLs with certification do we really have? And once you give me that number, once you tell me that we have 30 welders with this certification, or we have 20 truck drivers, then I'm able to align your workforce with recruitment opportunities. You tell me you have 30 welders, well, now I know where to go look. I know which door to knock on. So in a way, we have to get better with our data, right? We have to understand our region a lot better. And I think the biggest challenge is that with mines, with the correctional facilities in Milan, I think there's a real need to make sure we capture the capacity that exists within those facilities, within that workforce. And I think that starts with a true comprehensive labor assessment. And then that will allow us to, like I said, align our workforce capabilities, our workforce skill sets with those recruitment opportunities. Real quickly, just kind of want to give you a little bit of information. We did something called a location quotient analysis, and it's just looking at what are your base industries, right? It's a simple calculation. You take a certain sector, say like mining, and you divide that, the total number of employees within that sector divided by the total number of employees by the county, and then you divide that with the national, right? So for location quotient of mining, we're taking the total number of miners divided by the total number of employees in Cibola County, divided by the national number of miners, divided by the national number of jobs. And so when we ran that location quotient in mining, we found that mining was a base industry for McKinley County. It wasn't to the certain extent that Cibola and San Juan County find themselves in, but nonetheless, mining is an economic-based industry for McKinley County. And I think we had a location quotient a little over one. So anytime you go over one, it means that that's a base industry for you. And so I think McKinley County, you know, we've had some declines in our coal industry, El Segundo, Lee Ranch, P&M Mine. We've lost a lot of those jobs, so we're not, our location quotient is not as extreme as Cibola County. So we got a location quotient, I think a little over one. Cibola County has a mining location of 3. So they have 3 times the average, the national average of people working in energy jobs. And San Juan County, 6. San Juan County location quotient is 6, so they got 6 times the average people working in the energy industry. And I just pulled down the New Mexico data book from the Kansas City Federal Reserve, and they give employment projections. So speaking to the pressure that our base industries in, McKinley County is, according to the KC numbers I have right here, McKinley County has the 3rd highest unemployment rate in the state currently right now. only behind Luna County and Lee County. And number five is San Juan County. And I think that has a large part to do with the downturn in the energy economy up there. And I looked for Cibola. Cibola is number 13. And I have a feeling that with CCA closing, it's only going to be a matter of months before Cibola creeps into the top 10. And so here in the very near future, you have the real possibility of having McKinley, Cibola, and San Juan County, having the Northwest New Mexico, having those three counties in the top 10 for unemployment. So our region is under pressure and it's under duress. But kind of going back to location quotient, we've identified five sectors for McKinley County. One is mining, one is retail trade, number three is accommodation food service, number four is healthcare social assistance, and number five is public, all the public employment, whether it's local, federal, state, etc. So those are our economic based industries, just kind of based on that quick calculation. And we all know it, right? Anecdotally, we all know it because we see the activity that happens. But to actually see it, it's very interesting. So kind of getting back to workforce development, I think the issue, one of the things that we've done with workforce development in our BRNE programs, we put together a business resource matrix. So we actually sat down, we sent out surveys. We sent a survey to Cindy over at SBDC. We sent a survey over to Ben Jones with the Church Rock Incubator, to our partners, and I said, okay, with the business services, what resources do you really provide? Not what your organization provides, but what is your individual skill set? And so Cindy said, this is my skill set. Ben said, this is my skill set. The COG said, this is my skill set. And we produced a simple one-pager business resource matrix. So now we have businesses that come in and talk to us. We say, this is your issue. These are the individuals that can help you. These are the individuals that have that skill set. And we need that for workforce development. One of the things that we have struggled to begin to get our arms around is the number of players within workforce development, right? Who are all the players in workforce development and what are their skill sets? Not just of the organization, but the individual that are manning those organizations. Where can we pull so when a business comes in and says, you know what, I have this issue, we can say, you know what, SBDC, Church Rock Incubator, Workforce Investment, these are the guys you need to go speak with. And we're able to cut that red tape down and add value to what they're doing. So labor assessment, number one, to be able to get ahead of the immediate challenges that are facing our economic-based industries. But two, begin to catalog and put to paper the resources that are available in our area. And make that simple one-pager so when we get individuals coming to our office, say, you know what, I have a business plan. Who do I need to go to? I have this idea. Who do I need to go to? We'd be able to quickly direct them to the individual that they need to interface with and hopefully continue to build that. So that's kind of my comments today. Real quickly, going back to UNM Gallup, EDC is fortunate enough because we've become a partner with UNM Gallup and Gallup Land Partners through their entrepreneurship program. GGEDC serves as a site location for the internship program, and over the past, I believe, I want to say a little over 2 years, we've had the opportunity of six interns coming through the EDC. And our first intern, lady out of Zuni, she said, I want to start my own job. You know, that's why I did the entrepreneurship program. That's why I enrolled in this, is because I have a vision. And we only get these guys for 10 hours a week, right? And so we said, you're gonna work here for 8 hours, but 2 hours we're gonna send you to SBDC. And part of your employment, your internship here, is you gotta develop a business plan. So when you leave here at the end of the academic semester, you're gonna be able to have a business plan. And so she did it. You know, she worked 8 hours in our office, and then for 2 hours she went down with the SBDC. And she worked and she developed her business plan. And I'm happy to say now that she's in business. She has her own business. She has her own logo. She's a tough worker. And it was great. And the internships definitely add value. Because what we hear from business is that they don't have the soft skills, right? They don't have the soft skills when they come in and they're ready to work for us, and we have to retrain them. Internships is a great way to rectify that and to address that. And so the six interns come in. When they come in the first day, they're timid, their shoulders are slouched, You know, they don't want to make eye contact. Their voice is low. Once they're done, end of the semester, shoulders back, they're more confident. They're more confident because they know, if I can make it in the EDC, and if you know Patty Lundstrom, if I can work with Patty Lundstrom, then I can make it anywhere, right? And so they leave with confidence. They leave with confidence, and they have that understanding. They have that exposure with equipment. They have that exposure with document generation. They know, and they have that expectation. And so they leave much more confident. And if we can expand that and grow that, I think that is a great way to integrate or to better marriage, right, our workforce with the needs of our employers. And so it works great. It works so great, in fact, that you know the six interns that came through the EDC, I'd be willing to, you give me those six interns and you give me a challenge, we'll get it done, right? So those interns, those people that come out of UNM, there's nothing different about them. You know, they're not damaged. They're not less capable. You know, they're just as capable. We recently did a refresh of our website. So go to GallupEDC.com and you'll see our website. And I worked with our intern on that. Our intern out of UNM Gallup, I sat down with him and we said, we're gonna do this, and we did it. And I'd say now, without a fact that we have the best economic development website in Northwest New Mexico. Compare our website to Cibola County Economic Development Foundation, compare our website to San Juan County Economic Development Foundation, compare our website to Navajo Nation Economic Development. Our website is top notch, and that is because we worked with our intern, our UNM Gallup intern on that, all right? So these individuals that come out of UNM, they're capable. I think we just need to continue to encourage them. We need to continue to provide all avenues for them to enhance their learning experience. And I think that once we do that, then you know, I'd be willing to recommend any of my six interns to any of you all, you know, because I feel that confident about them. You know, they know what they need to do, they're trained, and they're good. They're good, and like I said, you give me a task and you give me my six interns and we'll get it done. Absolutely, without a fact. So I just kind of wanted to share that with you all, kind of jumping around here and there. But so let me just leave you with this. Economic development, when we started economic development, basically we started from scratch, right? We didn't have a website, we didn't have a building, we didn't have a program, and now we do, right? We have a premier website, we have a premier program, we have great relationships with partners in the area, and the opportunity is there. So if I can say one thing, is that the economic opportunities that exist for McKinley County are real. The opportunities that exist in terms of leveraging our transportation assets are very much real. The Gallup Energy Logistics Park as a long-term generator of economic-based jobs is very much real, and it's very much feasible, and we're continuing to work on that as quickly as we can, and we're doing everything we can to expedite that. And so it is real. The opportunities are real. Let's work together, because once these opportunities are real, we got to make sure that our workforce, our local workforce, is ready to step in. And if we do that, then we draw maximum benefit and maximum value out of these efforts. All right. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to present to you and talk to you all. And I'll be around for any questions. So thank you.
And you said you weren't prepared. That was great. Thank you. Another round of applause for all the speakers this morning. Great job. We have a few minutes here. We're going to let you go on a break at 10:30 for 15 minutes before we go to the panel discussion. We have some people in the audience. We have representation from the local governments, the chapters, from Nas City. We have Mr. John Hunt and Mr. KYG commissioners. Can you stand up, please? I think those are the only chapter from this region that I can recognize in the audience. I don't know what happened to Tohatchee. Also, in the audience, we have Ms. Tabitha Manuelito
from the Office of Economic Empowerment, and she is an employment community specialist, Help New Mexico. Can you stand up, please? And her co-worker, Michelle Bitsy from the same office. Sometimes you want to know who these people are in the audience. Maybe you might want to network with them during lunch hour. We also have from Navajo Nation Workforce Development, Mr. Ron Curtis, who was introduced earlier. Ron, can you stand up, please? Also, Ms. Tara Picciarello, Francine Tapazzi, Mr. Alvin Smith. All from the Navajo Nation workforce. When I introduced John has a boss here. You notice how he's well behaved? That's because Sylvia is in the audience. Sylvia, can you stand up, please? Yeah, she's our human resources director here on our campus. So, thank you very much. What we'll do next is we'll break for 15 minutes. And by the way, I kind of want to set this panel discussion up. We'll have these people sit here. We'll open up questions to the audience. And we're going to have, staying with the theme of this morning's presentations, developing a skilled workforce in the region, we're going to take your recommendations. We're going to put most of it, the real important ones, on flip chart. And we're going to post those around the wall here. And towards the end of the session, we're going to select the top ones, the top five or six